Prologue. The year 1141, according to the Armonian calendar. The youth stood by the great window, which on a clear day offered a spectacular view of the sea, but now the storm was upon them, and the rain beat wildly against the glass. Lightning tore across the soot-black sky, and a howling wind whipped up waves as high as the tallest walls, as if the ocean itself had risen in revolt against the palace. The weather was a mirror to the man's mood. He turned back to face the room, which was in fact a large hall, or perhaps enormous would be a better word, for it could fit 100 people and was mainly used for large gatherings. Despite its size, the hall was no echoing void. Its walls were adorned with paintings of Thucydidean history, between each of which stood highly polished suits of armour. Handsome hand-knitted carpets covered the flagstone floor, and rows of chandeliers suspended from the ceiling on gilded chains. It was here, in this hall, that the horrors had begun. He cast his mind back to the evening 1 week ago, and the memory of it pained him deeply. As tradition dictated, a grand feast had been held here in honour of the fair Hera, Thucydidea's beautiful goddess. At the same time, outside the palace walls, the townsfolk were celebrating the arrival of spring, rejoicing at the return of warmer days, the calmer seas, and the retreat of the gales and icy weather. Tavern owners and innkeepers supplied mounds of grilled meat, and there were fountains of wine from which to drink, all paid for by the emir, so that the poor and rich alike could eat and make merry to their hearts' content. The custom was deeply rooted and much loved by the populace. Many a noble visitor came to the palace from all the lands of Armonia, with the exception of Nazaria. There was much eating and drinking, fine speeches in honour of the gods, and, to end it all, a ball. This last was a much welcomed diversion, and the honourable ladies and gentlemen waltzed around the hall to a chamber orchestra until the stroke of midnight. But by then the atrocity had already occurred. His father, the emir, had been poisoned. But as midnight rang out, no one was aware that anything had happened. No one knew that someone had interfered with the meat upon the emir's plate. It had been a slow-working poison and went undetected for many hours, and it was not long afterwards that they managed to trace the noxious substance back to a morsel of uneaten meat on his plate. They also found discarded garments of the same kind as those worn by the servants that evening, and deduced that the murderer had probably been disguised as such. But then, in the middle of the night, when his father's personal attendant had come to wake him, he had known nothing of all this. His father, Bogard the Elder, had fallen rapidly ill, and when he arrived at his father's chamber, he was greeted with much confusion. The high priest, several healers, and not least the servants, were all fussing about his father, lying gaunt and cadaverous in his enormous bed. He seemed to have aged 20 years in the few hours that had passed since they parted company. Bogard's mother had died in a hunting accident a few years previously, and now only his father remained. The chamber was so crowded that he almost had to gasp for air. "Please, open the window," he asked the closest servant. He looked around the room at all these people clustered about his father. The emir called him over to his bed, and through a mighty effort of will, raised his voice and commanded everyone else to leave his chamber. Once the two men were alone, Bogard the younger rose from the edge of the bed and went to close the window again. His father's voice, when he began to speak, was feeble.
"My son, there are things you must know before I meet my end. I do not have long, no matter what the healers say. I have always known that this day may come, and now they have succeeded.
But, father, you will recover.
I pray you to be silent and listen carefully to me. When I have gone, you must succeed me as the new emir. There are people you must speak to, and things you must do."
His father then told him of the sacred relics that had to be protected at all costs, the importance of studying the prophecies with which they were bound. he spoke with him for over an hour. Borgard learned of all he had to see to, and of the people he could turn to for aid. Once all duties and essential business had been addressed, his father spoke of Borgard's mother, of about how he would soon be reunited with the woman he had loved so much, and who had been snatched so suddenly from them.
"Borgard,"
he then said,
"you must take great care. There are powerful forces afoot that want to unseat us from our throne. I must repeat my demand. The sacred relics possess tremendous power and must be protected at all costs."
The emir closed his eyes for a moment, opened them again and said,
"Now, have you understood all this?"
"I have, father," said Borgard with the tears rolling down his cheeks.
"But father, how will I manage all this? You cannot leave me now. What you ask of me is too much."
"Nothing is too much for you,"
whispered the almost unconscious emir.
"You must find the people of whom I speak. You will succeed, for you are stronger than you think. Besides, you will receive aid from unexpected quarters. There will also be a girl with powers beyond our comprehension. She will be our salvation. So it is written."
With these words, his father closed his eyes again and drifted off to sleep. Borgard felt confused. He did not understand what his father meant by aid from unexpected quarters, or by a girl saving them. He walked with leaden steps towards the door to summon the healers back inside as he brooded over what his father had said. What or who was it that could help him? He grew anxious and felt unprepared to shoulder his father's mantle. It was now a week since his father had passed away, calmly and without having gained consciousness. Borgard was broken with grief and powerlessness in the face of his father's death and the fate that awaited him. Shortly after his father's passing, a messenger approached him in the part of the palace where he had his private rooms to deliver a scroll. Although barely able to read for the tears in his swollen eyes, he unrolled the parchment. It was a command. There was no better word for the text he read. The ancient oracle wished to meet him tonight. Borgard was petrified. The oracle was feared throughout the land. Her premonitions were often chillingly accurate and dreadful, for seldom were the tidings she imparted good. He dreaded the thought of what he would be told. Now here he stood, waiting for her to arrive. A gentle gust of air made Borgard turn. In the gloom by the door stood a figure, the oracle. She seemed to shimmer and was swathed in a dark shroud that, apart from a small opening for her face, concealed her entire form. She seemed diminished by the enormous hall, and the new emir eyed her quizzically.
"Hail, thou young emir of Thelusia! Hearken unto my vision," she croaked. "A life of great turmoil awaits thee. Many sorrows will afflict thee, and the family that thou shalt one day have. Thou must beware the dark forces that begin with thy father's death, a death that was even intended for thee. I have seen he who poisoned the food of which thy venerable father ate, and he himself is now dead. The forces that impelled him to murder the emir of Thelusia forge vile plans. So too have I seen a young girl with begoding powers not witnessed since the Thelusian goddess Hera herself walked the earth. She will one day come to your aid. But oh, Borgard, the ninth of thy dynasty, be on thy guard against the horrors of the darkness that grow beyond the mountains. The day approaches when the power of the darkness will try to extinguish all light."
Borgard shivered as a chill swept through the room at her words. He was about to ask a question and had looked away for a brief second at a painting of his grandfather. When he turned back to the door, there was no one there. The oracle had vanished. In the vast lands beyond the mountains to the east, The Nazarian overlord stood gazing into the fire, his mind full of guile. There was a tentative knock and a door opened.
"My master, I have newly received word that the mission in Thulisia has been accomplished. The emir does not have long left."
Nazgoru turned and stared at his minion with eyes aflame.
"So that accursed assassin has succeeded in his charge, hm? The emir and his miserable brood are but a memory?"
Rakor had to lift his eyes to look at his lord and master, who was over 6 feet tall. He stammered in reply,
Yes, our envoy managed to taint the meat being prepared for the emir and his son. But as it was being served, something came to pass, and the son left. By the time he had returned, the servant had brought in the next dish. So death only came to the emir. The young boy had the fortune to survive.
Nazgoru's voice was like ice.
"So, the son will live! You call that an accomplished mission?"
I beg forgiveness, O Great One. I did not mean to speak untruthfully, but the son is a mere child of 17 years. What threat could he pose to you, my dreaded lord?"
The King of Nazaria furiously grasped the neck of his minion and plucked him up from the cowering position he had adopted.
"Do you not comprehend, you little rat? Youths grow and become men. I want their bloodline eradicated. When we managed to arrange the accident that took the life of the emir's wife, he and his son were to meet the same fate. But now you have failed me. Their loathsome dynasty will live on through the sun, and we will not be able to make another attempt for many moons. Out of my sight, you whelp! See to the assassin! The son must be killed without delay!"
Rakor scuttled out of the room in absolute despair. If he displeases his lord again, it could be his end, and it will be his heart upon the sacrificial altar. In the doorway he ran into a young boy, the Dark King's son, Hallam.
"Is father busy?"
asked the boy. But Rakor was too distraught to answer, and just hurried away as fast as he could. Hallam watched him go, shrugged, and opened the door. He could hear his father talking to the old Sibyl. He heard something about it not being time yet to free their terrible god, and he heard his father reply,
"That act is mine alone to perform, no one else's. I am the greatest of them all. My kingdom will reach from coast to coast, and I shall kill all those who resist my rule."
Hallam stepped back and withdrew into the shadows again. His father seemed to have lost his wits. He decided to go and see his mother instead.